He's a former professional footballer who played for lots of clubs, but most famously for Manchester United. 25 Premier League appearances. He has a winner's medal in the Premiership and also played in the Champions League with Manchester United. He represented England at various age levels and finished up, well, just about finished up his career at his hometown club, which he always wanted to play for, Cambridge United. And it was a bit of a poetic end to his career. He's written a book, an autobiography, called Not Just a Pretty Face, Football, Fun and Despair. Welcome to the studio, Luke Chadwick. Hi, Luke.
Thank you very much, Chris, and thanks for the brilliant intro there. Much appreciated.
Well, it's a very honest book. You're honest about yourself, you're honest about other people, you're honest about how tough life was, even though you were having a wonderful career at the very top and living your dreams and winning things. Not just a pretty face, football, fun and despair. What does that mean exactly? What's the story you're telling there?
I think the title was maybe a little bit tongue-in-cheek, sort of going back to the early stages of my football career when I was at Manchester United and I sort of suffered a lot of abuse about my appearance, the way that I looked at that time. And I think the book just sort of brings light to that. I'm someone who doesn't take themselves that seriously, enjoys having fun, enjoys having a good laugh, particularly during my football career. But I think the book is trying to take people inside the mind of a professional footballer back then and exactly what it was like playing at the biggest club in the world and then obviously going on to have a career within the game for a number of different clubs.
Your love of football, as you say in the book, is your first love. And I think that's one of the things that's running right the way through the book, is this drive to be a footballer from the very earliest age at school in Cambridgeshire, kicking a ball around, dreaming of playing for Cambridge United. That was your thing, wasn't it?
That was the biggest impact was going to watch Cambridge United play. As I think I was 6 or 7 years old, and my dad took me to my first ever game at the Abbey Stadium, and it absolutely blew my mind as a child, like experiencing the atmosphere, the crowd, singing, being so close to the players, and I just fell in love with I loved football, but that just took the love up another level and fell in love with the club, the players, and it was that was probably the biggest impact that anything had on me as a child, to then go and be someone that went and done that and played in front of a crowd.
And you got a trial at the club, you were a ball boy, and Arsenal tried to sign you, and then Man United snatched you and got you into their youth system. I mean, that's the stuff of dreams.
I was playing for the Cambridge Schools team at the time, scoring a lot of goals. I was signed to Arsenal as an under-13 player, then I got invited up to a trial at Manchester United over the school holidays to go and stay up there for 4 or 5 days, and it was absolutely amazing, and I fell in love with the club and knew that I wanted to sign there.
There's a photograph of you as a young schoolboy with quite a mullet on you. You don't have that anymore.
No, no.
With the tie and jacket, sat with Alex Ferguson, signing for Manchester United. Why did you want to sign for them? Why not Arsenal?
Arsenal was obviously like an amazing football club, but I never felt completely comfortable there. I was quite a shy, introverted young boy when I was coming through and always found it quite hard playing with other people. I was so happy with my friends, my peers, playing in the schools teams and whatnot. But going up to Arsenal was, I didn't enjoy it that much. Obviously, when I went to United, I was incredibly nervous about doing that. But when I got up there, I was exposed to the most amazing environment, culture, and I just felt at home straight away, and I was desperate for them to sign me, and when I got the opportunity to do so, I jumped at the chance and never looked back really after that.
Mm-hmm. In the book, there's loads of anecdotes of your time at Man United, and of course winning the Premier League and playing with the likes of Beckham and Scholes and Sheringham and all that. You're part of quite a sort of golden time there. What was that like?
Yeah, I remember because I was out on loan in Belgium to a club called Royal Antwerp, and I was out there for about 9 months, and it's when I come back from there that I was sort of put into the first team dressing room, first team training, and it was the most intense environment in terms of every day I was playing with 20 of the best players in the Premier League, and everyone wanted to win even a training game, and it was so sort of mentally, physically demanding, but such a period of sort of growth in terms of improving as a football player because you were playing with such high caliber players day in, day out. So it was, like I say, when I look back now as a 44-year-old man, I pinch myself really that I had the opportunity of doing that at that time.
Slightly overawed, I know you were at some times, and you say you're quite shy. And there's this anecdote you tell where Roy Keane had gone off on one and had stomped out of the dressing room, and you were getting a lift from him. Right, and he waited two hours for him to come back.
Yes, that was the day of the Manchester Derby at Old Trafford when he put quite a bad challenge in on Haaland. So it was he got a red card, and I couldn't find him after the game. And he was the one that was ferrying me about that day, taking me to and from my flat, and I was waiting for him for hours. And when he eventually did come back, it was a very somber, quiet car ride home back with him. And it was, like I say, to look back now and that, I say it was a really intense environment, but really supportive as well in terms of young players coming through at the time. And they always used to look out for you, certainly used to tell you if you weren't doing things well and you were making mistakes and whatnot. But sort of off the pitch, it was a really supportive environment of world-class footballers that I was involved in.
And off the pitch, nightclubs, you talk about that, and some of the parties, and occasionally you'd end up in the papers, you know, out there drinking after celebrations and so on. I mean, it wasn't all just football, was it?
No,
it was a lifestyle.
It was really, like, in terms of probably daytime radio is not the time to talk about some of the stories that we was doing when we went out of an evening and whatnot. But there was some really fantastic times there. And look, when I look back at my time at Manchester United, I learned so much, both in a footballing respect, obviously, but also sort of human side of things as well. The values that were expected of players for when you were playing at that club. And I think
The way you dressed, the training, the effort.
The humility, sort of hard work every day. And you'd sort of, a lot of players like myself that didn't go on to have a glittering career at Manchester United had the opportunity to have a career in football. I think most of that was because of the lessons that were learned at that club.
So where is your Premier League winner's medal?
My Premier League winner's medal is in a drawer, my desktop drawer at home. I take it out every now and again. Well, so I wear it around the house just to remind myself. Nice. That I did actually win one, but it's not.
Did you pitch yourself at the time? I'm just a lad from Cambridge. Here I am. You know, there's 100,000 people watching me right now. I've just scored a goal or whatever it was. I mean, amazing.
I think, like, then as a young lad, I probably didn't appreciate it as much as sort of when I look back now. I probably didn't realise the enormity of being at a club like that, because it would just come through the youth team, come through the academy, and you think, oh, this is what happens. You go through that, then you play a few games in the team. But so, as I keep saying, like, looking back now, it's something that I'm sort of, I couldn't be any more proud of being part of that football club and to have made enough appearances to get a Premier League winner's medal. There's not many people in world football that have got one of them, and many better footballers than me that haven't got one, and it is something that I'm extremely proud of.
Luke Chadwick is our special guest. His book is called Not Just a Pretty Face, Football, Fun and Despair, and we'll talk more about his career in a moment or two, in particular his return, famous return to Cambridge United. Bit of music first of all from Chapel Roan. It's BBC Radio Cambridge's Daytime Show. It's Chris Mann with your daytime show. A bit of a sporting spine to the show today, because, of course, we had Alice Dewey of Cambridge City, their CEO, as part of our panel in the first hour. Luke Chadwick sitting with me right now, talking about footy. And then Graham Swan with me live at 12, live from Perth in Australia, ahead of the Ashes series there. A bit of cricketing royalty. You into cricket, Luke?
I do like a bit of cricket, yeah. Looking forward to
the Ashes. Bit of a showdown. For you, being a Cambridge United fan, of course, the Ashes equivalent was any game against Peterborough, and you played a few of those, didn't you?
Unfortunately, I never got the opportunity to play against
MK Dons.
MK Dons, that was always quite a feisty affair. I think we were two teams competing at the top of that league, and it was a game that I'd always love to have scored in, but unfortunately they always seemed to get the better of us in the important games.
So the clubs you played for, Man United, and of course there was loans to clubs like Reading and Burnley, but West Ham, Stoke City, Norwich, MK Dons for a good 5 years or so. I mean, that was a big period there. And then Cambridge United and a final little trot out for Soham Town Rangers. But the emotional one for you was coming back to Cambridge United. You knew that your career was coming to an end, and there was one sort of last throw of the dice, and you approached Cambridge United. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I was sort of at MK Dons at the time, still sort of playing quite regularly. They had a player coming through at the time that played in the same position as me that was a little bit better than me in Dele Alli. Dele Alli. I knew they had someone.
You played in his debut, didn't you?
Cambridge City, yeah. Great night that was. And then I knew that if I was going to come to Cambridge, well, I could still at least run around a little bit, that I had to do it soon. So I spoke to Carl Robinson, who I got on really well with, the manager of MK Dons, and said, look, this is what I've always dreamt of doing since I was a little boy. And he was quite surprised, but very understanding as well. And he said, like, we'll look after you and sort of help you however we can. So then we approached Jez George at Cambridge, spoke to him. He spoke to...
I think he was the director of football at the time, wasn't he? Or chief executive,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, I think so. And then he spoke to Richard, and then it
Richard
was...
Money was the manager?
Richard Money, the manager. And then we sort of made it happen. And something that I'm really sort of proud of, obviously instigating a move myself to do something that I'd always dreamed of doing, and I got the opportunity to do that.
Of all the stuff in the book, I'll be honest with you, and the Man United things and you playing abroad and other, you know, there's lots of action in the book, but the bit that really strikes me is when you score your first goal in a Cambridge United shirt and run to the Newmarket Road end. And what a moment. You wasted all your career for this.
Yeah.
It's just such a big thing for you.
I've never felt so emotional on a football pitch before. I remember we were playing Southport. I think we might have been winning 1-0.
This is in the old conference.
In the
course.
Conference, yeah, the National League, and sort of had a really poor first touch, but managed to get my toe end of my left foot to it. It rolled in the net, and I can't explain how happy that made me feel. I remember sort of celebrating in front of the Newmarket Road end, and it really hit me that this is the coming together of all those sort of dreams as a young man. And
as a 10-year-old, you'd been a ball boy there and you'd watch your heroes play as a kid and everything.
Exactly. It was a really special moment. And I remember sort of celebrating with the lads. And then sort of when I was walking back, I thought, I think I'm going to start. And I'm not that emotional of a guy. And I thought, I'm going to start crying here as we walk back to the centre circle to start the game again. But I managed to compose myself. But one of the most special moments of my life doing that.
Because people wonder these days whether footballers really have an attachment to a club, because as you did, you know, you move on every maybe year, year and a half. You know, folk are moving all the time. So does it mean much to them to play for a club? And I think one of the things this book shows is, yes, it does, right?
That, without a doubt. And don't get me wrong, I'm very grateful. Like, every club that I played for, I loved being at those football clubs, but it did feel different playing for Cambridge United because it was a team that I'd grown up supporting all my life and had such a strong affinity to them.
One of the characters in the book is your Mrs. Haley.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and she comes through as someone that, you know, you owe a lot to her and the family and your two boys, you know, involved in football these days. And here's the thing, which I was amazed at, is even when you were playing at some of the biggest clubs in the country, every Christmas she gave you what?
Yeah, Cambridge United shirt, without fail.
With your name on the back.
Name on the back. And when I turned into a dad, I had a couple with Daddy on the back as well. But I remember every Christmas morning opening the present, knowing exactly what it was.
That's amazing. That's a lovely, lovely story.
And that it is something. And I think it was always something. As a kid, I'd always had the Cambridge United kit. I remember the first one I ever got, when my dad got it to me, I used to wear the full kit everywhere out in the garden, and it was just something. It was obviously a little bit of fun as well, but it was always a Cambridge United shirt for Christmas.
And there you were, wearing it for real. Well, there was some success that season. We'll talk about that in a moment or two. A bit of music on the way in just a moment. Let me just check the travel. Don Henley, the Boys of Summer. Chatting with someone who's had a few summers of off. How long between seasons would you have as a footballer, as a bit of rest, Luke?
Probably about 4 or 5 weeks. But I think as you sort of the game moved on, most of those summers were spent sort of keeping yourself fit and doing your own thing and following a programme.
You're still playing occasionally. You played for a Man United kind of all-stars this week, right?
Yeah, well, I say I played. I was on the pitch. I'm not sure I actually played. But, yeah, we had a lovely weekend down in Poole in Dorset, and we played a charity game yesterday. We lost 5-3, unfortunately.
Biggest crowd you've played in front of?
The biggest crowd was actually on a pre-season tour to Malaysia, where we played at the National Stadium in front of 85,000. Wow. So that was the biggest.
For Man United?
For Manchester United, yeah.
Best players you've played with?
Best player would have been Paul Scholes. My favourite player to play with would have been Teddy Sheringham, who I was lucky enough to play with at United and
West Ham.
West Ham, yeah.
And the trickiest player to play against? You know, who kicked you up in the air the most?
I think not so much kicking up in the air. The hardest player I sort of grew up the same sort of age to get past as a winger was Ashley Cole. He was just so sort of quick and nimble himself and sort of ran you the other way as well. He was my toughest opponent, I would say.
So you come back to Cambridge United. It's the dream. You want to play for your hometown club. You know your career is coming to an end, which in itself is quite a thing. You've been playing professional football all your life, and suddenly you think it's about to be over, and you want kind of one last peg, you know, something to hang on the peg, right?
Yeah, I think it was sort of doing something probably a little bit selfishly for myself in terms of obviously it wasn't as much money at Cambridge United, but it was something that I'd always wanted to do. So to do that was a perfect way to end the career, as it were.
So you join a club which is doing quite well. Richard Money's the manager. There's probably another look, actually, in the team who's, like you, would go to Premier League level, Luke Berry.
Yeah. Right?
Who was, I think, man of the match, man of the season, 2014. And you get into the chance of getting promoted back to the Football League after goodness knows how many years. So that's your dream, to get the club up there. So just tell us what happened.
Yeah, so obviously we achieved that. We beat Gateshead at Wembley, and the whole sort of lead up to that, it was a massive game for the club. Like, we had to win that game. It'd been 9 years since we'd been a Football League club, and the pressure on that game was huge. It certainly wasn't a classic by any stretch of the imagination, but the final whistle going was probably more so than any sort of joy, was just sheer.
I think you were crying on the pitch, weren't you?
So emotional on the pitch.
Steve Jackson was interviewing you. I remember trying to talk to you on the pitch after the game, as he was talking for BBC Radio Cambridge. You were talking to all the players, and I remember you'd lost it a bit.
A little bit. Probably the only time that I'd ever completely lost it. My kids were there. They were on the pitch at Wembley, and it was just a case. I remember well speaking to Jacko. We always still speak about it to now, and it was a really emotional conversation. It was emotionally.
Had you played at Wembley before?
The first ever time.
Wow.
First ever time to play there, and it was. I remember when Ian Miller snapped his Achilles, and we'd used all our subs.
Dusty Miller, he was the captain.
The captain of the team, and it was the longest 10-11 minutes injury time of my entire career. But to hear that final whistle was just, as I say, it was a moment of sheer relief that we'd achieved what we'd set out to do.
And kind of poetic that you come back to the club and this success happens. I mean, that's a fantastic thing. And you feel you made a big contribution.
I feel like I was part of the squad. The team had done incredibly well throughout that season until I'd got there. We were up at the top end of the league. And maybe it was a case of the second place team doesn't regularly get promoted, and that's where we were. And we had a really dodgy game against Halifax, lost the first leg, and then
I think between qualifying for the final and the final itself, you lost about three or four games in a row. Actually, everyone thought, they've gone off the boil.
And I think we definitely had, and I think we scraped over the line at the end, and thank God we did.
There was one final treat to happen, and again, stuff in your career just seems to have fitted together so beautifully. Look, is that you have one kind of last big match, and wouldn't you know, it's against Manchester United, because I remember the draw being made for the FA Cup because the chairman and the manager and lots of other people in the club were in my studio at the time for the fourth round in 2015, have I got that right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
And Man United came out.
unbelievable. You couldn't dream it. I remember watching the draw at home and seeing, obviously we wanted a home game and that came out first, and you know all the numbers were at the side of the screen, and when they said it, you knew it was Manchester.
I think it was 32 Manchester United. And then the game at the Abbey was a sellout. It was live on telly. Cambridge actually almost stole it and played them off the park, and it was a very talented Man United team. And you had the replay back at Old Trafford, and you played. And it was kind of the last big game for you, wasn't it? You had other matches to play, but it was the last big one, certainly the last at Old Trafford in a competitive game.
Yeah, it was the last start that I ever had in professional football. Don't get me wrong, at the time I didn't want it to be, but that's what it ended up, so it was quite a nice...
And you went off to a standing ovation from the Old Trafford crowd, which is beautiful.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that at all, really. I went, it was the first time I'd ever been back to Old Trafford as a player throughout my football career, and to get that ovation that I did was very surprising, but also sort of very touching as well. It made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up as I sort of walked off the pitch as I was replaced in that game.
Unfortunately, it was a 3-0 loss, if I remember rightly. Was it 3-0? I think it was.
Yep, 3-0. Yeah. I think we had a really good chance early on. Tommy Elliott hit
the post. Three minutes in.
If that went in, you never know what could have happened. But I think we went up there, maybe not expecting to win the game, but what an experience for everyone, and what a financially... for the club as well. Yeah, it was a massive game.
We'll talk more in a moment or two. BBC Radio Cambridge. I'm chatting with Luke Chadwick. His book is called Not Just a Pretty Face, Football, Fun and Despair. Matthew Mann has written it with you. Don't know him, no relation to me. But the foreword is by another Cambridge United and Man United legend, Dion Dublin. A bit of a mate of yours.
Yeah, so... actually, one of my biggest heroes as a child growing up, obviously watching that John Beck team with Dion and Shaggy up top, it was a really exciting team to watch, and he was one of my biggest heroes. And then to have the opportunity to play with him later in my football career at Norwich City was very, very special. I think I used to bore him to tears just quizzing him about his time at Cambridge United day in, day out, but we got on really well, and I'm really grateful for him to obviously write the foreword to the book.
Here's the thing, you've had to delve back, you know, a few years for this and remember stuff. Did you have it all in your head? Was there stuff you'd forgotten, remembered? Has it brought back memories?
Yeah, I think Matthew was great sort of working with him in terms of the way that we used to have conversations, and some of it was quite sort of tricky to remember, but some of it I remembered like it was yesterday. So it's quite a therapeutic sort of process going through the stages of writing the book with him and sort of going back and sort of just reliving my whole football career, really.
One of the things that your career has peppered with, sadly, was injuries. Quite a few of them, you know, all kinds of hips and knee injuries and other stuff like that. And some of it was pretty gruesome and painful.
Yeah, there were some bad injuries throughout my football career.
When you were playing for Norwich at Ipswich, you'd scored a goal and then you had a freak accident. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was probably the worst one. Made my debut for Norwich. I was absolutely buzzing to sign for the club. Then my first game was against Ipswich in the East Anglian Derby at Portman Road.
Wow.
Managed to nick myself a goal, thinking this is too easy, this is the best move ever. Then with about 10 minutes to go, got pushed off the pitch, collided with one of them furry Sky Sports microphones and sort of gashed my knee, which turned into being a couple of micro fractures.
It opened right up.
It was a horrible, what turned out to started out as a perfect day turned into an absolute nightmare come the end of it when I was lying in a hospital bed in Ipswich.
Right. What about the goals? I mean, I know some footballers dream about their goals. Some can't wait to get it. Eric Cantona, you know, walked away from, he's an actor now. Completely, you know Eric, right?
Oh, of course, yeah.
I mean, just what a character. Other people, you know, can't escape the football. It's all they've ever had and they cling on to. What about you? Where are you in this?
I think like when my football career first came to an end, I found it really challenging and thought, what can I do now? Always wanted to just play football, but unfortunately, time catches up with all of us, and really struggled with that. Now I'm sort of completely over it, got a different part of my life. I do remember a lot of my goals, particularly the first one I ever scored for Manchester United against Bradford, and the other one I scored for the club against Leeds United. But I think I didn't score that many, but I'm sure there's a couple I may have forgotten.
I watched a documentary series recently of the 99 team, the Man United team that won the European Cup. And in that, Teddy Sheringham described scoring a goal as better than sex. Right. Is that true?
I would probably say, for me, I hardly ever scored any goals, so it probably was at that moment. No. But I'd put it on a par at least.
But that feeling of scoring a goal, big crowd, important game, score a goal. Can you put that into words?
It's so hard to describe that sort of feeling. Without doubt, as a football player, to score a goal is the ultimate in terms of on a pitch, in front of a crowd, to hear the crowd sort of cheer. It's such a feeling of euphoria when the ball hits the net. I know a lot of players these days have got their own little celebrations and that sort of thing. Yeah. But for me, when I scored, the emotions just took over and just run away. It's just so sort of happy and delighted that I'd scored a goal. But it is a feeling that is like none other, and I wouldn't be able to describe it in words, I don't think.
A lot of people in the music world, rock music in particular, kind of go off the... you know, off the reservation a bit, because at the end they're doing a live gig for 3 hours or whatever else. At the end of that, you know, they're an adoring crowd. What do I do now? You know, it's 1 a.m, and of course they stay up all night and parties go on and all the rest of it. And some of them get into trouble, you know, all the rest, because of the stimulants they're using or whatever else. What about footballers? What do you do at the end of... I know you're physically tired at the end of a game, but you've had a great game, you've scored a goal, you've won something or other. How do you relax at that point?
It is incredibly hard. Obviously, the adrenaline from playing a game of football is huge, particularly in night games. It was always a nightmare to get to sleep. I think in football, in terms of, because physically you need to be ready to go again in a couple of days, so it was a case of, obviously, you'd get time to let your hair down and enjoy yourself, but usually it was, you just, as soon as one game's finishing, right, you're now preparing for the next game, which is going to be in 2-3 days' time.
When you've finished playing, you were coaching. You got badges and involved in various setups and so on. People will want to know, what are you doing now?
So these days I'm a director of the Football Fun Factory, which is a children's football coaching organisation, which, as the name suggests, is all around making football fun and enjoyable for young children. So it's really still involved in football, but the complete other side of it, where it's not about becoming a professional footballer, it's about children falling in love with the game and having a lifelong affinity to it, very much like I've had. Obviously lucky enough to have had a career in professional football, but so lucky to have had really positive early experiences when I started playing the game, my first grassroots club around 7-8 years old. So now it's about trying to do that on a mass scale, to see tens of thousands of children just playing the game purely for fun and enjoyment in a really relaxed environment.
You've had a heck of a life with this, haven't you? Football's been good to you. Simple as that.
I couldn't be more grateful for the game. I had the opportunity to live my dream as a professional footballer for some 18 years, and it was something that, don't get me wrong, as you read the book, people that read the book, there was many highs, many lows within that, but I wouldn't change any of that now, because it's all helped me develop into the person I am today. But football is an incredible life. Don't get me wrong, it's not easy, but I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to do what I dreamt to do when I was a little boy growing up.
Well, as I said at the beginning, it's a very honest book, and you're honest about yourself, you're honest about other people, and I'll leave people to read what you said in the book about some of the characters, you know, Fergie and other managers that you work with. But what comes through also is hard work, Luke. You know, it doesn't just happen. It's not a gift that sort of just, you know, arrives one day. You've got to really work at it, right?
Yeah, and I think that's, like in football, as a young player at Manchester United, obviously I was playing with some of the best players in the country, but never as a sort of a young 14, 15, 16-year-old, not one of the best players. But what I was able to do, what I did, was to work as hard as I possibly could every day, and that gave me the opportunity to play for Manchester United, probably more so than anything else. Obviously, everyone there had a lot of talent, but it was the fact, it was those that dedicated themselves to the profession that had the opportunity to play at the club.
Lovely to see you again, and what a great book. I really enjoyed it. You went on holiday with me to Cornwall last week, you know. I took the book with me and read it there on the beach, Luke, so lovely to see you, and well done.
No, thank you, Chris. Really appreciate it.
And the book is £25 in hardback right now, Not Just a Pretty Face, Football Fun and Despair, by Luke Chadwick, and it's published by Pitch Publishing. Lovely to see you, Luke. Thank you.
You too, Chris.